Hey everyone, Adam D here, coming to you with another episode of CTF Radio. And we have I'm really excited for this episode. It's been a long time in the making. This person was actually very hard to like get and wrangle together on a podcast, even though it's a person I see every day and it feels like just another, work meeting that I'm in right now. But before we get to our guest, I do have, like always, the great Zardis here. Zardis.
Hello, hackers.
Wow, still slaps. All right. So, Jan, when you think of CTF and you think of some of the best reverse engineers that you know, what names come to mind?
I think two names mainly, Fish and Fish.
That's definitely not where I was leading you towards. I meant other people who aren't the guest. This was like building up towards, you know, like announcing the guest.
That's right. Let's see. We have who's a nice, uncomplicated historical figure that everyone likes.
Jinmo. Literally watched him reverse in live CTF. Oh. The guy is really good and really fast.
Yeah. Why aren't we interviewing that guy?
I don't know. We don't know him that well yet. If we do another PPP-er, we should just rename our fucking podcast to PPP Radio.
Oh, good. There's the CTF scene has a lot of legends, right? So you might, depending on when you were CTFing, you might know about Geohot's domination of that era of CTF, for example. You might remember Loki Hart, basically not quite single-handedly, but you know, being a huge part of several DEF CON wins. You might remember a lot of these titans, but the Titan of Titan that we have here today.
We may want to get those people on the podcast. Can you not be publicly right. by stating we're interviewing people that are better than all the people you just mentioned?
No, you know, it's we'll say the same thing about them when they're
That's
on.
Great. That's great.
Throughout kind of the last decade of CTF, in our corner of the world, there's been an incredible CTFer driving both Shellfish's participation in CTFs after CTFs. In fact, we had talked on previous episodes of this podcast about kind of Shellfish's golden age. In that 2013 through 2016, 2017 era where, you know, Shellfish, after a early stunning performance in the CTF world, a victory at DEF CON in 2005, kind of started slowing down as a generation kind of turned over. And the next generation of Shellfish, when I was in my most active, was in that era when also Fish joined us and led a huge resurgence in Shellfish's activity in CTF. And now, for the last 4 years, Fish has been on the organizing side of the table, organizing DEF CON CTF. So huge impact in CTF. Awesome to have a real legend with us here today. Fish, what are your thoughts on Fish?
It's very hard to pretend that I wasn't around and not laugh about what you said. But here I am.
Wait, you were listening to that whole time?
I try not to listen, but Young's voice is very penetrating.
Great. Okay. Well, yeah, Fish, why don't you give the people a very high level, let's talk about who you are now, and then we'll dig into your past. So maybe you can give us, like, you know, talk about what you're doing now, who you are, that kind of stuff.
Sure. Hello, everyone. it's a great honor to be here. I don't really listen to podcasts. This will be the first podcast I listen to and the first podcast that I'm being interviewed at. So this is Fish. I'm right now a professor at Arizona State University, doing research in computer science and doing some system security stuff. And I used to play a lot with Shellfish, and then I branched out after the OOO days to be part of the Nautilus Institute to help organize DEF CON CTF. As a result, I didn't play a lot of CTFs with Shellfish. Sometimes I play random CTFs under different names just along. So that was, And now I'm back. I was looking forward to playing more CTFs with Shellfish. You know, I'm even in my Shellfish shirt, but
nice.
Although I'm wearing Shellfish shirt every day, I only really played one CTF so far after August. So yeah, I mean, growing up is hard, and you know, I'm getting older, and there's just, you know, too many obligations in my real life, and playing is getting harder.
That's one of the classic difficulties of CTF. So what's your hacker handle?
Just Fish. Sometimes I use LT Fish. That's my handle on GitHub.
What are your burner CTF accounts that you play under that we can stalk you?
It's a great question. I don't know.
Also a great answer. Some combination
lost
LT
to sleep
and
deprivation.
Fish. Yeah, exactly.
If you
really
happen to find a concept only solve reversing challenges, that's probably mine.
That'd be really funny, concept for a TV show or something. Like, the person falls asleep after being up for 24 hours, wakes up, logged out of the CTF, doesn't remember their name, so they have to go back in and resolve the challenges.
Oh, damn.
anyways, okay. So this is great. So you are, it's... I think very clear, like Jan said, I think the things that you didn't say that I know about is you were I don't know the right term because I don't want to step on Jan's shoes, but you're a very high level member of the Shellfish CGC team that won third place. Jan was obviously the leader, so I don't want to say, you know, co-lead if that is.
No. I was just a normal member who happened to be working on a component. That was it.
Wasn't it one of the core things? No. Anyways,
I don't remember. It might have been so long.
You also are one of the Anger co-creators, and like Anger is your baby. You've also pushed the field of decompilation forward. So you are the father of Anger management, or the open source decompiler. What are some other Fish things, Jan? That
other Fishisms? The key thing is there's this saying that be the person your dog thinks you are.
You don't have a dog though.
That's what? Right. I have a fish.
What does that even mean?
No, I'm just kidding.
What?
I think it's I think a lot of things. And I'm realizing we're here to interview Fish, not fanboy over him for an hour as we record.
We're trying
this
to
episode.
Give the people context into Fish's background. I think a lot of it will be clear. So you've done a lot of hacking with Shellfish. You've done a lot of playing with CTFs with Shellfish. You've helped organize DEF CON CTF for 4 years. So this is what you were mentioning in August was when you stopped, Nautilus retired. And so you've been trying to get back into playing CTFs since then. So this is great. So then take us back to how did Fish get started in CTFs? Where does the fish origin story start?
I went to a college in China.
What?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
And I remember that was back in 2011. Was it 2010 or 2011? I don't remember. Probably 2010. So I was working in a research lab. The research lab was all about cybersecurity. And one day, the advisor was like, hey, you know, we have a CTF that night, show up. I was like, what's a CTF? And he was like, I don't know, he tried to explain it for a while and he couldn't. I think maybe it's just me, you know, being like too new by the time and couldn't understand what he said. And then he was like, just show up. And then I showed up. It's a CTF called ICTF. There was this, you know, half an hour, someone gave a pep talk for a while before that CTF in the lab. And they were like, okay, you know, we just saw the char bass and play. I was like, okay, I have no idea what's going on. I just like sit down. And then I asked others, what should I do? And they were like, hey, you know, there's a scoreboard. Sorry, not scoreboard. There's a board of challenges. I still remember that page, you know, like page looks like some, you know, run some circles, like one circle around another. And then there are like different challenges with different scores. You can, you know, click on one of those circle pieces and get the challenge and start working on it.
And this was, wait, so which year? 11, you think, or 20?
I don't know. It's the money laundering year.
Yeah. Okay. That's why we had side challenges, so you could get, anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had very little idea of what CTFs are for. I had zero idea of like what those challenges were for. And then, you know, I opened the challenge. I was like, okay, that challenge has the highest score, 500. I just, you know, download it, work on it. It's a Windows reversing challenge, self-unpacking. And I was like, okay, I'll just solve it. So I worked on it for like an hour, first blood of the challenge.
What?
And
your first CTF. You first blood enough.
Can you guess who wrote that challenge? Do you remember?
Benjamin Kayatz. I remember I remember it from the write-up, actually.
So I did an internship at UCSB during that summer, or the following summer. And then I asked around and it was Ben. Anyways, so I worked on that challenge, you know, it didn't take long. So first blooded it, and everyone was like, what the heck is going on here? That's never happened. Like,
did they even understand? Did they think somebody cheated? Like, why? They're like, well, who solved this 500 point challenge?
I remember someone asking like, who solved it, right? Like, I was like, I solved it. You know, no one knew of like what's happening. But like, I just solved the challenge. And I remember that you got to get points and then like start doing money laundering, right? And then like my teammates quickly laundered all the points away by losing them.
Oh, so this was. Anyways, we can provide context later. That's
exactly. So
questionable game design decision.
Yeah, and I worked on some other reversing challenges. I think there were like, you know, four or five other reversing challenges. And then I didn't really solve. I don't remember if I solved like any other challenges or not. But that was a challenge that, you know, it was a fun net activity. It's like it was, you know, overnight thing in China because of time difference.
Other challenges from that year, COBOL.
There was a COBOL. Oh. Yeah, I worked on that one. It was fun.
That was yours, right?
Challenge. Yeah, that was my challenge. Young's.
Yeah. But yeah, and then later on, I realized, you know, that's Young organized that year of ICTF. That's how I got into the CTF scene.
Wow. Okay, so wait, that was the year that we had the like newspaper theme, right, as the scoreboard? Okay. And then what was the deal? Because ICTF is usually attack defense, right? So I don't remember how the laundering works. Was it just not attack defense that year?
I never really understood.
No, it was. It was a hybrid.
We literally have a research paper about this that we could go read. But
yeah, exactly. There's a Jeopardy board of challenges. Huh. This is what Fish was talking about with the two concentric circles, maybe three. And then there was a the tag defense component. But in order to score in the tag defense component, you had to somehow infer the current money laundering conditions. And the tag defense was the money laundering. And so when you submit a flag from the tag defense, you also submit some amount of points that you got from the Jeopardy component. And that together determined by some success or like some risk awareness.
There's randomness, yeah.
Shit, yeah. Then gets you your points. So basically we had everyone tackle a bunch of really cool challenges and then we kind of randomized their score. And wrote a research paper.
Whoa. We didn't randomize their score. We created a game to see how people would approach like risk and how. Yeah, exactly. And as we can see from Fish's example, if you don't, which we learned many, many times over ICTF, if people don't understand the game, they just like will submit anything.
Yeah, those were like these not early days of ICTF because ICTF is quite old. But already by then it was quite old. It was an era in ICTF where we tried crazy things every year and
really trying to play with the CTF format. Like what can
CTF
exactly.
We try to invent kind of new things. And sometimes inventing new things in CTF is successful. Someone at some point tried King of the Hill and it stuck. It wasn't ICTF, unfortunately. But we tried a lot of crazy things. One of the things that we tried 2 years after that, maybe three, is every team brings a challenge. And at the time, this was massively controversial. Like, we had teams quit.
I remember.
Yeah, because they were like, yeah, I think, Fish, was that, did you host that one?
I hold both years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, teams would were like, ah, and now this is a format of CTF that's well accepted. Luckily, you randomly lose some of the points that you gain from hacking.
Turns out people in a game love earning points and hate, like, not earning points or learning negative points.
But we did. We gave it a good call, 2 years of trying, right? So your year was an analogous concept too, right? Sometimes flags would count for negative.
Yeah, people hated it.
People hated it, and then we tried, okay, sometimes then you can't lose points, but you can get zero.
Which is very funny, because now so much of the high-level CTF play really comes down to rule analysis and, like, you know, and strategy and metagaming and stuff like that. But anyways.
You could say we were exploring this.
Yeah, enough talking about us, our parts in Fish's story of this, which is really funny, though, because we were on the other side of that. Like, I that was the year I distinctly remember you wrote the stupid registration form in Bash, and I, like, was trying to audit it to find a vulnerability to tell you how stupid it was to write a CGI bin submission form in Bash.
I want to find that and just put it as a level in the...
I bet I have it. I bet I have it somewhere. All right.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, let's put it as a level in the shell dojo. There's no way to write secure Bash. So I'm 1,000% sure that it is vulnerable. Yeah. We just didn't have the skills then.
There is a regex DOS.
Code and all this.
Yeah, there's a regex DOS, but I didn't... didn't have the patience to actually trigger it. But anyways, all right, Fish, this was your first CTF. You blew away the rest of the team by doing this. You stayed up all night. And then what? Then were you, like, addicted to CTFs?
And
you played CTFs every weekend after that?
No, it was 8 a.m. I rode a bicycle back to my dorm and went to bed.
And then what after that? Did you catch the CTF bug?
Great question. I don't quite remember. I think I started playing CTFs gradually, and then not a lot of CTFs, but, like, so I was with Team Blue Lotus back then, right?
Was
that
the same team you played with for that first CTF?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that was your lab team, basically?
It's the lab team, yeah. So we started playing CTFs, and I actually don't remember how many CTFs I played back then, but, like, you know, I would say, like, between that very first CTF and the first DEFCON calls that I played with the Blue Lotus, right? We weren't playing that many CTFs, but after the first DEFCON calls, we didn't qualify. That's after that, you know, that's when we really started to play every single CTF. There also weren't that many CTFs to play, so
yeah, this is when we say played a ton of CTFs. It was like the 4 or 5 a year, right? That was
I think I was probably doing like 20.
20? Okay. But it wasn't like every weekend and double on Sundays. And
but I do remember, because, you know, back then Shellfish was already kind of one of the older teams, and suddenly Blue Lotus exploded out of nowhere. I just suddenly start seeing him on the scoreboards. It's pretty cool.
Oh, and it's interesting that you remember.
Yeah. Jan is,
because we
very...
definitely do not remember Shellfish.
Wow, what a burn. You're part of Shellfish now.
Well, not back then, like 2011, 2012, like
we're just the old dogs, you know.
So
well, we
don't see
actually
Shellfish a lot
so,
on scoreboards.
So there was a bit of a weirdness in the team that back then. It's like, we want to go to DEF CON, like, you know, be like top, however, but if we're not going to be all in on some random CTF, and like you said, back then there were fewer random CTFs, it's like, we don't want, like, I don't know, to throw in Shellfish and it's like 87th place.
Yeah.
And so then we would sometimes, like, play as random named teams.
Happy
and
fail.
It's like, yeah, exactly. Like,
I remember
if,
that
if
name.
If we're not taking this seriously, we're not going to name ourselves Shellfish. It was kind of a different era, different feelings back then.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back. I think the part of your story that's very fascinating, but that seems almost implausible. Like if this was in a movie scene where some, you know, young undergrad gets thrown into a CTF and then gets a 500-point reversing challenge and then first bloods it, which means first person in the entire CTF that solves it. This person who'd never played CTFs, I would sit, look at the screen and I'd go, this is fake. This is like, there's no way a person could do this. So can you talk about how is it possible that you were able to be at a point to do that and having never played CTFs?
Yeah. So I did, and I still do a lot of reversing. So I reversed, I spent a lot of time with viruses. You know, now they're called malware, and anti-malware, and like
getting
back
access.
Then.
Yeah. When you say back then, what ages are we talking?
When I was in my elementary school, middle school, and high school, and yeah.
So you were just reversing for fun?
Playing with them, reversing, and understanding what's going on, like, you know, writing.
What drove,
rootkits,
to do that?
It's just fun.
Yeah, but you have to get started somehow. Like, most people don't look at it like a .exe that they double-click or run in Windows and be like, I wonder how this works. Like, how did that even start for you?
Great question. So this is really hard to remember nowadays, right?
Because you're so old. We should have done this 10 years ago.
Yeah, but like I remember, you know, I was very interested in software cracking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, virus and antivirus and, you know, rootkits and anti-rootkits. Like in the end, you know, a lot of things that are like, you know, low level and are like, you know, unconventional, you know, most people believe that you got a executable, just run it, right? It's the same idea of you got a USB key on the ground, pick it up and plug into the USB port of your computer, right? But no, I want to understand in most cases like what they're really doing, right? So I think that's how I got started. Yeah, so it's the same for, you know, cracking software. It's the same, you know, back then, like there were like games that were protected. I wasn't into playing games themselves. I was more into like, you know, understanding how the game protection worked. You know, back then, like Windows XP introduced this activation mechanism. So I was like, how does that work, right? So that's how I got started.
So you were reversing Windows like activation key stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't that good. So I had to like get a lot of information online to see what other people have attempted. But yeah.
How do you, you know, get started in this back then? Right now, right? If someone said, hey, I want to understand what this software does, I tell them, go to Pwn College, the premier bubble. But back then, it's not as simple, right? I was first exposed to reverse engineering in college through a college course.
So there were some forums that I usually go to, like, you know, in China, right? And like now as I think about them, you know, those forums, they're not like super they're not super large. So you know, it's like purely by coincidence that I you know, dropped onto those forums and started you know, learning things and trying random things. I was very lucky that I had a friend at the time online. His handle is Iceboy. I still have we're still friends nowadays, but like we don't contact each other as often. You know, he taught a lot of these things. He taught me a lot of these things. Yeah, so that's basically how I learned a Visual Basic, VB6 from him. Yeah.
Wow.
We should beep out that handle just to make it sound more mysterious.
Probably not going to do that. I mean, you can do it, but I will not do that.
And then, like, you know, just spend a lot of time with OliDBG.
I was just talking about this with another day, man. The kids today don't know Oli. They didn't even register when I talked about Windows debuggers.
Yeah, go use x64DBG. It's so much better.
Exactly. But so, okay. So you're not only, so, and what like, so you mentioned Oli debug, but what about like, what other reversing tools were you using at that young age?
Young as in like before my first CTF?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oli DBG. That was it.
So, yeah. So no like decompilers or
nope.
Even disassemblers, no IDA.
I mean, Oli DBG is a disassembler.
That's true.
slightly different, I guess. It's
what
it's, no. It does. I mean,
disassembles the process, right? So
yeah, but it's not like a static thing that usually. Anyways, no, it usually is. What
you
I
click
think
around in it.
It is static.
You can, but that's not the purpose, right? It's not like a.
It's not the okay. That's actually not true. Like, you know, what I used to do a lot was just dropping the binary into OLEDBG, started press Control A to start the ultimate analysis. It tells you, like, you know, what roughly which function starts and ends at where, and start reading.
Wow,
like poor man's IDA.
I was gonna say, so you didn't have access to IDA. That was kind of where I was trying to understand.
I didn't even know IDA back then.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, nobody on these forums mentioned that there are tools. Like, if you're doing game cracking, there's not, you know.
No, man.
It's a tiny
jump.
That was
back in between like 1997 and 2003. I don't think IDA
this
was
well predated. Wow, this well predated IDA's like graphical, because IDA's GUI came.
Not even 1997. I think I did my math wrong. It's probably like somewhere between 2003 and 2009. Yeah, I went to college in 2009.
Yeah, and we were like I was doing CTFs in 08 and 09. We had IDA
in 09. IDA had a.
We even have Collaborate then, I think, right? Or was that 2010, 2011?
Yeah, maybe more.
I'll tell you, IDA is great. But, like, you know, I only started writing Python in 2012, really.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. So, okay. So you didn't really have access to tools. And so if people didn't get that, you were reading the x86 disassembly, right? Like, you weren't reading a decompiler that pops out some C thing. So then when you got to this CTF challenge, it was pretty like then straightforward of what to do. Like, you knew, like, okay, I'll just start reading this code.
That CTF
and
challenge?
Out.
Yeah. I think so. Okay. I would say, like, for a while, right, you know, getting these CTF challenges, I had no idea what I was supposed to do, right? Especially back then. But that challenge, the challenge that I started with, I think it was a very well-designed CTF challenge. It was pretty clear. Like, you know, it self-unpacks, or just, like, unpack all the way all the way until the innermost layer, and then it just extracts the flag, right? But the problem is, you know, how do you control, like, where you want to, you know, interfere with the unpacking process and whatnot? That was... Like, the instruction was just so clear. I like that COBOL challenge. I still remember that COBOL challenge. That what am I supposed to do with it? Like, I had very little idea.
Bad design.
Anyways,
there was an RSA bug.
I didn't even know what RSA was, man.
Well, I mean, okay, come
exactly.
on, that's,
not
that seems like a skill issue.
No, that's also not true. I knew what RSA was, like, you know, implementation wise, but like I wasn't sure about, you know, vulnerabilities or whatnot. I just didn't care, right? It's not what a reverser would care about.
And I remember this when you eventually start CTFing with Shellfish, you would do the reversing part of like a pwning challenge. And when we would eventually fail to solve it, it would be like, you know, turns out there was this vulnerability here. You're like, oh yeah, I saw that. Like, well, why did it just say it?
One comment, the IDA comment that says "vuln" in all caps.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, what were we talking about?
So we're talking about tools, because I want people to understand that you were like, I think many people nowadays don't even really understand that people can do this, but you can read x86 code and translate it kind of to C in your head.
Yeah, I think so. I think, first of all, you know, I've always been dreaming about a decompiler, right? But like, so I learned VB6. I was a very big VB6 programmer, right? And I learned assembly because I had to like reverse, you know, whatever that needed to be reversed. And I was like, what if I had a decompiler that would decompile assembly code to VB6? That has been my dream for a very long time. Right. And after that, I was forced to learn C or C++, actually. And I was like, okay, you know, this is probably what the real decompilers would decompile to. This is all before I knew the existence of usable decompilers. Right. I tried random decompilers, you know, that could download online if they weren't viruses. They wouldn't work. It's not like, you know, like they wouldn't work now in the sense of, you know, trying to decompile a function, it gives you something that is slightly wrong. in most cases, they wouldn't even load the executables that you feed to them for whatever reason. So I only had access to IDA after through our lab, actually, after playing the first CTF with them. And then that was back when it was like IDA 5.1 or like one of those really early versions. I think like the decompiler was just released as a plugin, or like, you know, it was released like probably like 1 year or 2 years after that. I really don't remember. But if when you press F5 to decompile, there's a 50% chance for things to just crash. Like, yeah. And I was about to lose all of my reversing progress.
Wild. That's crazy. Okay, so then you CTF'd with Blue Lotus for like a year and a half, and then you did an internship at UCSB.
At UCSB, yeah.
And then you started summer playing CTFs with Shellfish?
No, I started, like, I only played with Shellfish during the summer, right? And I went to DEF CON Finals.
Without us?
Yeah.
With Blue Lotus? Then,
no, with Shellfish during that summer.
Oh, really? Is the next year you were with Blue Lotus? Okay.
Because Blue Lotus didn't qualify.
Okay.
Qualifying for DEF CON Finals is not that easy. I mean, nowadays, like, they would qualify all the time. But back then, it was...
Okay, so then what did you think when you joined Shellfish? Were you like, wow, these noobs, like, really don't know what they're doing compared to your Blue Lotus crew? Or was it... What was the vibes like?
The vibes? Like, I showed up. You know, I was like, okay, well, there are many challenges. And then they were mostly about exploitation, right? They were mostly about pwning. And I was not a pwner. I'm still not a pwner nowadays, right? I can pwn, but like I'm more a reverser, right? So I spent a lot of time.
Website where you can learn a lot of really cool pwning techniques.
What's that website?
Pwnable.kr. Yeah, I'm sure this is like the 10th time I've made that joke.
So anyways, I spent my entire first DEF CON Finals with Amat. That he's a very good pwner. He was with Shellfish. I basically bugged him the entire time for like 3 days straight so that I could write shellcode. I did not know how to write shellcode.
Damn.
And Amat had this great batch script that he could use to dump bytes out of an object file and then convert them into escaped strings so that we can use them as shellcode in the script. Okay, so I learned how to use Linux during that DEF CON Finals. I did not use Linux.
Wow.
I learned how to use Bash. I learned how to use that shell script. And I was like, hey, Ahmad, my conversion is just wrong. Like, there is this, like, you know, anyways, the converted string doesn't work. What's going on? Like, that entire time, I'm pretty sure I wasted multiple hours of Ahmad's. Ahmad got so annoyed in the end. That was my first DEF CON CDN or DEF CON Finals.
That's crazy, man. And that's an interesting also note for the folks back home. Fish, in case you were wondering, you think like, well, elite hackers obviously use Linux because you've been brainwashed by Jan. No, Fish runs Windows and he like, what?
I was going to say, it's true. Elite hackers run Linux.
I think elite hackers run whatever they are best at. So Fish is definitely in that category where he runs like, but you learned. So maybe this is a theme, like the CTF kind of forced you and helped you learn these new concepts like shell coding and bash scripting and Linux and those sorts of things.
Yeah. At least, like, you know, for me, I'm a very proud Windows user. I bring my laptop to a classroom that I'm going to give a presentation. I want to like plug and play, right? I don't want to like plug, spend an hour debugging why the projector doesn't work.
Dude,
and then we'll have to play someone
why
else's
plug
laptop.
And play when you can plug and pray.
Dude, it's exactly. It's the Docker. It's the snap. It's the.
Yeah. You know, none of that really matters when you need to give a presentation.
100%. I actually agree.
It matters. It matters a lot. Because
yeah, when you're panicked.
From working.
And then how many times have you said, Adam, do you think we could use your laptop to present?
Probably less than 10.
Yeah. I think that's actually probably fair, but it should be zero. okay, yeah. So, equipment aside of what you use, so what draws you to CTFs? Like, why? Is it just like the application of this reversing knowledge that it sounds like you've loved since you were a kid? Like, why CTFs? Like, it's clearly a big part of your life.
Yeah, so that's also a good question that I ask myself, you know, many, many times, right?
Like, late at night. Why?
4 a.m. on a Saturday night. Why?
No, I don't do that. I usually do that after we lose the CTF. But I think, so for example, right, I really only work on reversing challenges. I think I enjoy reversing challenges more than anything else in a CTF. But like, also, you know, I'm not sure if you know me or not, but I'm a very competitive person. I want to win everything that I'm in, or any competition I'm in. I would just try my best to win. And CTF is this kind of like, you know, low stake competitions that just happen every weekend. Why not?
Low stakes. People don't stay up for 48 hours straight on a low stakes competition.
You only stay up for 48 hours, and you're not going to lose your car or your house after losing it. So,
what are the competitions?
Unless
are you
crash it on the way home.
Yeah,
maybe.
Dang. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's the competitiveness plus the like. Do you feel like you learn stuff from playing in CTFs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only do I learn stuff, like I get inspired. I get, you know, a lot of like motivation for both of my, you know, research that I work on and, you know, why don't I have better tools, right? I ask myself every single time after playing a CTF. But like, really, I just really enjoy working on reversing challenges. Like reversing challenges are, to me, just understanding things that, you know, most people wouldn't understand, right? Or like understanding things that are not supposed to understand, that are not supposed to be understood. So I think that's very fun.
And yet,
like I used to tell this story, but you know, I've been told by others that it's inappropriate nowadays. But I can still say that, like, you know, as a kid, right, you might be interested in reading someone else's diary. That's bad, right? But you know, it's so cool because what, like, there's secret inside, right? And it's not supposed to be read. Mm-hmm. I think reversing is exactly like that.
Interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Whereas like, you know, exploitation or pawning is closer to like you want to get control or get hold of something else that you usually won't be able to control, right? That's not something I care about.
Hmm. So like the difference between knowledge, understanding, and
I think it's
and
the difference between like exactly getting access to knowledge versus, you know, controlling something else that, you know, usually cannot do.
Hmm. Interesting. Although people would probably say that pwning is just the application of knowledge, right? So it's about
maybe
the control is just the act of you demonstrating knowledge, but it isn't. I mean, it may not be acquiring knowledge.
So, like, you know, or another example that I sometimes used to explain, like the process of working on pwning is that, you know, you bang your head against the wall for like hours and hours and hours, and in the end, it worked. Right, you get happy for like a second, you get a flag submit.
Yeah.
For reversing, you constantly get this, you know, influx of happiness when you're working on it because like every single second you'll know a little bit more than the previous second.
Right. Yeah. This gets into what we've talked about with different styles of challenges and like also why it's, you know, a reversing challenge. You kind of know when you're on the right track, or it's always mm-hmm. clear yeah. where you can go because as long as you know what you know and what you don't know. You can keep refining what you don't know until like the bigger picture starts to emerge.
Yeah.
Whereas with pwning, you can get stuck on a trick that you don't know. That's
exactly.
Like, you know,
almost... I usually would say that's a skill issue.
Or a knowledge issue, or, you know, like, yeah, it's like, how do you teach yourself the ways that people go about looking at the, like, for those types of things, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I fail to solve many a reversing challenge, but I'm rarely completely lost. Whereas with pwning challenges, I have been completely lost.
Just yeah, no exactly. Hope. So like, if you don't know that trick, it's, you know, sometimes it's just, there's no hope, right?
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So I like that because I think that's part of what talking with people about CTFs. I guess my other question is though, why not go into reverse engineering as a like job? Like, you know, there are jobs out there that it's full-time reversing and figuring things out. So if that's what you love so much, why not do that as a job?
Yeah, man. How do you know I'm not doing that as a job right now?
I don't have access to
my tax returns.
Sure.
But like, seriously, though, I care more about automating reversing or like freeing myself and people like me from having to do reversing all the time for the rest of their lives. I think that's horrible, right? I enjoy this process, but you know, no matter how good I am, Young thinks I'm very good. I don't think I'm very good, right? Like, but no matter how good I am, I'm still one person with only like, you know, 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, right? How much can I really reverse? So, you know, when I was in my middle school, I was like, I wish there were better decompilers, right? You know, and then in my college, I had access to decompilers. I had access to either the only decompiler that was working back then, working to some extent, right? I was like, I wish there were better decompilers, right? That wouldn't just crash 50% of the time. That would actually decompile x64 binaries, right? Or that like that could, you know, give me more ways customization, like, you know, this wish list goes on and on. I was like, you know, maybe we should just develop a more usable decompiler. There were two reasons why I ended up at UCSB and doing my PhD. One was I wanted to play CTFs and Shellfish, you know, I could happily play with Shellfish as part of Shellfish and play CTFs all the time, and no one would be blaming me, right? That's not the case if I were going to any other, like, university labs and doing my PhD. The other thing was, so Yang gave me a good argument back then, and Yang was like, hey, you know, we can work together and work on binary analysis. And the only thing I cared about at the time was, hey, you know, we could build our own decompiler.
But he made you wait how long? A decade before doing the
decompiler? It took a while to build the groundwork.
Yeah, so, you know, it took a while to build the groundwork, and then you know, the field of decompilers weren't like easily publishable back then. There was also this, like, I think sometimes, you know, I'm not sure about Yang, but I think Yang is a perfectionist. I'm also a perfectionist, right? So for a decompiler, which is like the top of the tree for it to be ready, you gotta have the root ready, you gotta have the trunk ready, you gotta have everything ready, which is, I'm very happy we didn't start by writing our own lifters. So a lot of groundwork was required, and then, you know, as a PhD student, right, sure, I could play CTFs as much as possible, but we still gotta work on publishable papers, and having a publishable idea about decompilers was very hard back then. And honestly, like, anger just like wasn't there at all, right? Yang was convincing me and like told me from the get-go that the right way to recover CFGs for binary is to emulate every single block. That's been there for like 2 years before I was like, Yang was full of shit, and I just redid all of that.
See, before
that,
there was
CFG Fast was created.
That's how exactly CFG Fast was created. I think like Yang had this this bizarre idea of, you know, dynamic analysis is the root for everything. And I think dynamic analysis is probably the root of 80% of all the evils. But I don't know, man. I was like a new PhD student. I trusted Yang too much. That was clearly a mistake.
Before GPT being confidently wrong about things, there was me being confidently wrong about things.
Yeah, but I think GPT is like more correct. Or in more cases, GPT will be correct. So,
yeah, but it's possible. It's possible. Yeah. But we did manage to very quickly create a very useful platform on which we could continue building.
Yes.
And then eventually we had a decompiler.
You know, actually, during my PhD, right, there's one summer when I was interning at Microsoft, summer 2017, I was like, I couldn't wait any longer. I'll just like start building a decompiler on Anger and create every missing piece that was not there. That's how I started working on Anger decompiler.
So is that why Anger, the framework, supports like static analysis?
No, the static analysis support was actually, you know, started from that CFG, right? That I defied Yang's will and I started working on CFG Fast. But then after that, that's how I created the entire static analysis stack in Anger.
Right, in service of the decompiler, essentially.
In service for the decompiler.
Or the decompiler. The vision in the early days was that we would have, you know, one way to lift blocks, and this was VEX, and then one way to interpret the effects of every block, and that was executing it. And then you apply that in aggregate in different ways. And one of those was the control flow graph analysis. And then we kept like, if you say, well, but we need this thing. And then, you know, this thing would be, we need to be able to merge the effects of the execution of the block from, you know, in different contexts. And then we ended up with the ability to execute that same block on multiple different types of data being fed in, and things got more and more out of hand until Fish just said, fuck this, and wrote his own CFG. It's very,
the
very
like,
crazy.
Yeah.
And big drama in SecLab.
I'm not sure about the drama. It's just like me openly defying what Yang wanted.
It's a good, I mean, it's, well, I don't know about openly defying makes it sound really bad. But like, I, you know, he A, wasn't your boss, so I don't think you were defying anything.
He was my mentor.
Sure, mentors give advice, right? Not commands that you could defy.
Exactly. Exactly.
But Yang is also very convincing, right? He's always been very convincing.
Why do you think I hosted DEF CON CTF, man? It's because of this guy.
Yep.
No, you convinced me.
I re-convinced you after you convinced me. It was a reflection attack. It wasn't my fault. Wild. Okay, so then why still do CTFs? Like, you talked about, you know, reversing being fun, but you've been doing this for over a decade now. So, and you've done, you know, you've hosted DEF CON CTF. Like, why keep playing CTF? As you noticed and as you mentioned, right, as people get older, they often very frequently kind of just drop off and fade away.
Yeah, so I think it's actually very close to like, you know, if you're used to working out, right, you would continue working out because like you get, you know, happiness and joy from working out, right? The same here. But you know, even if I'm not playing CTFs, right, I very frequently start debugging random software issues, right? I very frequently start you know, fixing random things.
Do you want to describe some of the issues that you have found, that you have told me about?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I would
give people context,
tell you about issues. But like the point I'm trying to make here is that reversing is just fun, right? I think I enjoy this fun process. You know, a lot of things that I debug daily, or I wouldn't say daily, but like, you know, during my day life is Windows itself. Windows still has quite a few weird issues, one of which, if you're interested in, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested in, you should try to figure out how many handle leaks there are. When you right-click on your desktop or right-click in your Windows Explorer window, I reported probably, you know, 5 to 6 such issues over the past like a year or 2 years to my friends at Microsoft. So
how did you find these? Was it dynamic analysis? Were you fuzzing these things?
Nowadays? No. I just, you know, take a look at open handles in Task Manager and see which processes open many handles that are like bizarre and, you know, try to reproduce and see what handles are opened, started like, you know, static analysis, you know, in IDA or sometimes in anger management, and then go from there.
Nice.
Right. But like these issues are very easy to find, right? Figuring out like why they happen is actually not hard. I'm surprised, right, they're not fixed until, you know, I report these issues. But like what really matters is figuring out where to patch, mm-hmm. why that happens and where to patch, because like only reporting a bug to Microsoft in a lot of cases, they don't care. It's the same, you know, if you report bugs to many other software vendors, they don't care because what doesn't matter if it's not, you know, causing crashes, if it's not a security vulnerability, right? So what you gotta do is reporting why something happens and ideally provide a patch. That's what I'm doing with the box I'm finding right now.
Wow. Okay. So you're actually also trying to upstream the patches that fix these things?
Yeah.
Wait,
you know, supposedly,
you don't
right,
have access to the source code.
Well, Microsoft gives you very good symbols, first of all. And second,
so from the debug symbols and the binary, you say you got to fix this logic in this function.
Yeah. So, yeah, before I get a new, you know, fixed release, I usually have my local patches that I just implement in Access for DBG. So, you know, it no longer bothers me at the very least.
I don't think I've touched
that's
Linux
a level
that
of
much.
Customization of Windows that I think few people have. Yeah.
I mean, for years and years, right, you right click on Windows Explorer, like you open a window, right click on a, you know, blank space, you leak 140. Registry handle keys or key handles. Like, what do you expect me to do? Just being okay with it?
Exactly.
Get more memory.
So your system gets slower and slower and slower the more handles that are leaked.
This is what I like about working with you is you change reality to your vision of reality, which is good. I
just can't like stand this kind of issues. Like I know I could solve it, right? And why don't we just solve it?
You joined the lab in 2013?
UCSB? Yeah, 2013.
Your PhD. Yeah, I remember back then, like, you know, Shellfish would play like one CTF every other month or something. And Fish came to me and was like, Jan, you're the captain of Shellfish. We need to be playing more CTFs.
Was those the first English words he spoke to you?
That's right, basically.
I learned just enough from a dictionary so that I could compose a sentence.
It wasn't that a joke that you couldn't speak English. The running joke is that you didn't speak English for like the first 2 months of being in the lab.
When I was doing my internship.
Yes,
That's also true. Actually, yeah. I walked in, Fish started his internship, and I think I was in Japan or was I?
I have no idea.
I don't remember. I missed like the first
pitch meeting
appearance of Fish in the lab. But I had written down a project idea on the whiteboard. And I walk in and there's this dude that's always napping at his desk. And as far as like just always napping or just working quietly and very intensely. And then I found out later, Jan, he's working on your project. and the project involved reverse engineering the entire copy protection mechanism in Windows, used by Windows and shipped by another one shipped by Amazon, etc. And then this guy just like a first blooding a challenge just breaks this DRM. And I'm like, there is no way. He's got to be confused about something. There's no way he sits down. His internship was 8 weeks long. There's no way you sit down and in like 5 weeks you have broken this, done this whole research project and this crazy idea of tracking data flow in live kernel memory to find where the DRM.
It was user space. Come on.
Where the DRM data is decrypted.
It was Microsoft Play Ready.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, Fish, can you like show me? Like, let's make sure this all. He drops a production ready GUI. He's like, here it is. And I just like, I click start.
Was it a DB6?
No, PowerOf.net.
It was really well done. It worked out. Like, wow. Anyways,
I just want to say that, like, you know, so when Giovanni was introducing these ideas, right, you weren't there, but I was like, okay, I've been having that idea for years. I had that idea when I was in my high school.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And which became, for the people outside, Movie Stealer was the paper. Was it CCS?
Was the paper,
USENIX 2013.
USENIX. Yeah.
So that was, right after that Movie Stealer presentation, Fish and I wrote the first lines of anger.
No, you wrote the first line of anger.
Well,
I couldn't write Python back then.
We were pair programming. Writing the first line of anger was C, you remember.
I know.
A wrapper around libvex. Anyways.
I'm a fan of anger.
Exactly.
What's going on? Anger.
It's just
sound effects.
Yeah, it's good sound effects. Others. So anyways, Fish starts his PhD, comes to me and says, Jan, we need to be playing more CTFs. And I was like, all right, you know, I know, you know, this is the CTF, we got to do it. And fast forward. So I think your PhD, you know, my PhD started in like September. My anniversary with my girlfriend is late October. And I'm explaining to her how I can't go out on our anniversary because it's like, some CTF that I don't even Hacklu maybe I don't remember, and Fish is forcing me to play.
She's sorry.
Like, what? It was pretty good, but there were more.
And now you're blaming me.
Yeah, I blamed you back then. Even
I didn't know that
exactly. Yeah,
just shouldn't have come to ASU.
Fish goat or scrape fish or something.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay, so we're running close to the end, Jan. Any questions for our great guests that we haven't dug into? What's your favorite CTF challenge that you've ever done?
Great question. I don't remember
one of the best ones that comes to your mind.
So that's very interesting. That's a very interesting idea. So like I remember I spent a lot of time dealing with CTF challenges, but like, you know, I don't have a vivid memory of many of them. But I remember one from like the really, really old days. I obviously, right, I talk about that challenge that Ben wrote for the first year of ICTF that I played, but I'm not going to talk about that one. There was another challenge that is running in CLI, and there are like, you know, it was basically a game where there were like multiple levels, and then, you know, for every single level you got to figure out how to you got to explore that level and figure out the stair or the entrance to the next level, mm-hmm. right? And then by the time you're like going up one level, it's like producing a byte or like, you know, it's a stroke of the flag somewhere in memory, but without telling you. Once you get to the final level, it was like, hey, you already have the flag, and then the program quits. So if you weren't reversing it statically, you wouldn't know that it's building the flag in memory, right? I reversed it first before I started playing that game. I knew it was building the flag. And I remember that's how I first spotted it.
So you put like a breakpoint at the end?
I don't remember how I solved it, but like I think it's more important to know that it was actually silently building the flag, and then you could just like dump it somehow. But you know, that's more of my reversing style is that you know, I would spend a lot of time nowadays, right? I would spend a lot of time in tools before I even run that executable. Right. You know, statically analyze as much as possible, understand as much as possible.
So how do you feel as a reverser, right? I mean, one of the things you're trying to do, like we talked about, is extract knowledge, you know, from a binary, from a program, secret hidden knowledge. Are you worried at all about the rise of LLMs that seem like they can extract information or knowledge from, you know, static sources like binaries?
I'm very happy, actually. Right. This is like, you know, you asked a reverser back in 1996, you know, do you worry about having better decompilers at all in the future? They will be excited. Right. You ask someone back in 1940, do you worry about having better, you know, computers, better CPUs, better calculators? They would be, you know, they would have been excited.
Maybe. Same but here. A lot of those initial people in 96 who were really good reversers were hesitant to pick up the early decompilers and use them.
I know. Right? You know, none of us really picked up LLMs before ChatGPT was a thing. We were all super skeptical back in like 2018, 2017-ish. LLM has been around for a while.
What do you see as the point at which decompilers became, like, when did you switch to a decompiler from reading the disassembly?
I would say somewhere between my first CTF and the DEF CON calls of that year.
So pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I guess.
If there's a better tool, I will use a better tool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you just didn't have access to it before.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't have access to it before, but also like, you know, I'm very quick instead of in terms of adopting better tools. So I could for a while. This was like when I was much younger. Disassemble bytes for x86, like visually, and you know, assemble certain instructions as well. I could no longer do that because of decompilers.
I can. I mean, I still have a couple, but I remember.
Yeah, exactly. I still know a couple, yeah. Like the common ones that I use, but I used to be able to do most of them.
This would be a great challenge, actually.
What's the fun?
No, like one of the live CTF challenge. You just give someone pen and paper.
Yeah, you right, mean like our...
And all you give them is the result, like sec fault.
Yep. I don't even have exams for my classes, and now we are getting exams on pen and paper for live CTF players.
Maybe, on the topic of LLMs, we may actually be going back to pen and paper exams, but cool. Okay. Do you have anything before we let you go? So thanks so much for sharing your, you know, story with the community. I think it's, you know, you're definitely a person that people look up to and know in the community. So I think, you know, people getting to know your story and know a little bit about you is super helpful. Do you have anything?
I'm not sure how much of that is true, but I also realized that I didn't get to talk more. I didn't get to talk much during this interview. So I got to learn a lot more about Yang.
What? Oh, no.
And Peng College.
There's barely any phone call, just a question. We usually actually go, you know, we can always do follow-up episodes. It's the nice thing about a podcast. We're not restricted to anything, so we can go super in-depth because there's a lot of stuff we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about your CGC days. We didn't talk about your, you know, we touched on decompilers, but we didn't really get into it. I know you can go super deep on those topics as well. Yeah, do you have anything you want to, you know, I don't know, if people want to reach out to you, where should they, where can they find you? Is there a good...
Yeah, so, you know, the best way to get to know me is to start using Anchor and start giving us issues and PRs. I'll be very happy if you find Anchor to be useful and if you can make it more useful in the future. Yeah, other than that, I'm very happy that you invited me, and it's great to talk to you guys.
Awesome.
What do you want to say, Young?
Yeah, you look like you want to say something.
What? Oh, no, I was curious. What didn't we ask you about yourself?
Great question. I also don't remember. But like, it's okay.
All right. Well, on that super awkward note, thanks. So thanks for joining us today, Fish. I'm Adam
D. It's time to go back to PGP.
You can find me online at Adam Dufay. He's Zardis. You can find him online.
We need a voice clip of that.
At Zardis. We're CTF Radio. You can find us online at CTF Radio 000, O's not zeros. You can send us questions through email at ctfradio00@gmail.com. Take care and happy hacking. This episode of CTF Radio is produced by Adam Dufay. Theme music provided by Swarty. Lyrics by Carlene Dufay.
Algorithms, Easter eggs. It's all about the hack. Python, chaos, nights of sleep never getting back. Noob or leak. Make your best attack, because it's all for the glory of capturing that flag.
What are you doing? That's all you need to know.